Welcome to Fundamentally Drained Podcast with your hosts, Father Everett Lees, Father Tom Dahlman, and Justin Dixon. Three Christians exploring Christianity from a perspective other than the fundamental view from which we have become fundamentally drained. We'll begin the conversation and you take it from there.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right, so today we are going to talk about fundamentalism, which is a fun word to say, because most of the time I get tongue-tied when I'm trying to pronounce it. There's lots of isms in religion, but we decided to focus on fundamentalism today and kind of expand on that idea. So, you know, with most words like this, let's go around or someone throw out their definition or the definition of fundamentalism first for us.
How about the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word fundamentalism?
I like this. Go.
Westboro Baptist Church.
Okay.
Literalism.
Literalism. Okay. Legalism. Which are all very similar. I was like, well. But yeah. Yeah.
So you two, your words could have applied to any religion, but mine only applied to Christianity. So I'm the bigger jerk.
You are a jerk. we have to put in a laugh track so people know we're kidding. To make people think we're kidding. You know what? Go ahead. You were jotting notes before we started this. Do you have an opening for us here outside of what we just did?
I don't have an opening. I wanted to appear really intelligent whenever you started asking questions.
Please do. All right, so, all right, well, I digress. So we both had our thoughts. What is fundamentalism when you think of Westboro? Okay. Expand on that.
Well, okay, here's what I'll say. I grew up, I would call myself fundamentalist growing up, or maybe at least conservative evangelical, but leaning towards fundamentalism. And I grew up thinking that that was true to original Christianity. And that's what people like Richard Dawkins and those guys will say as they're setting up the straw men so they can win their debate against Christian fundamentalists. That they're being true to the scriptures. You know, this is the original way of looking at it, this literalism. But that's a modern view. Fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism in the U.S. arose at the same time as higher criticism, rationalism. Same time that Darwin's theory of evolution is really taking off, Christians begin reacting to it. And that's when Christian fundamentalism is born. So it's like two sides of the same coin. They're both reading things the same way. One group is just reading history and science in a certain way. We're Christian fundamentalists are reading the Bible in a certain way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's not a way of reading and understanding faith and scripture that would have been possible in the ancient world, is my point.
Okay.
And it's in contrast to how scripture would have been read in the ancient world.
Yes.
I mean, it's you go and you look at the early church fathers and how they approach scripture is so different than, you know, either the like, I don't know, the Bible Society. What's the group with like Spong and Borg and all those guys?
The Jesus movement,
yeah. Where they try to recover the historical Jesus. That's what it's called. And so there was this kind of, I don't know, this modern ego that thought, you know, we could get back to the, you know, to the real thing and kind of get rid of all the stuff that doesn't make any sense. And it's not that the task or the pursuit isn't good, but I think sometimes we have to check ourselves and say, okay, how much do we, you know, how much smarter are we than, you know, which I think seems to be kind of the underlying assumption is that we have finally arrived at, you know, higher intelligence, and so we can kind of get rid of all those silly things that didn't really happen, just get down to the core. That's scripture.
And is that description what they perceive as fundamentalism, or the Jesus movement is?
The Jesus movement would call themselves liberal.
Okay.
Open-minded. They would claim to be searching for kind of the truth, and it's kind of the shadow side of fundamentalism. It's like,
okay.
But they have more in common with fundamentalists. It's the same way of thinking, you know, that propels both the far left and the far right, the atheist and the fundamentalist. It's the same thing.
Interesting. Okay. Who is Richard Dawkins?
He is. You should be shamed for saying that.
Okay, that's fine.
He's like the leader of the new atheist movement. He wrote The God Delusion.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. Lots of books like that.
He has the Dawkins Delusion on his
website. That was a gift from someone.
Nice spot.
But he's using science to disprove God, using logic to disprove God is kind of what the God Delusion is.
Okay.
Another example of that is Christopher Hitchens' God Is Not Great. Who else? What's the other guy? Sam Harris. It's another big example of these guys that think the same way.
Okay. All right. I just didn't want to assume that everyone knows who we're talking about, because I didn't know who it was either. Yeah. So you can shame me, but I'll make sure we all...
No shame if you're in the listening audience.
Okay.
Sorry,
Justin. Please. Birth of fundamentalism. So you just mentioned it alongside evolution when you were describing it, and when Everett wanted to tie your hands to see if you could still talk without moving your hands. And so I can't either. Mm-hmm. I wave my coffee around while I'm talking to make sure I'm directing an orchestra here. But birth of fundamentalism. I have heard and read many, many things, and for some reason, I feel like I will be validated if I can go back and find out, when did this happen? You know, when that's my professor voice. When did this all start? But I read bits and pieces, and so I don't know if there is any such thing as the start. But one piece was, now I'll just mess it up, where age of... Oh, someone else jump in. I'm going to lose my words here.
Well, the Scopes Monkey Trial is...
Okay, 1920.
Really, yeah, it really hit.
Okay, good.
The political scene, and it started to become impact our political discourse in the country and the way we deal with the Bible and science.
Right.
Well, and you can look back, you know, we frequently talk about... America being a Christian nation, and it's interesting that it took a long time for Christmas to become a national holiday. And the reason being is because you cannot prove the date that Christmas occurred. And so for the government to say that December 25th is a national holiday was actually quite controversial, because there were people who were essentially fundamentalist, who says you cannot prove that December 25th is the day that he was born, and so you don't need to be celebrating Christmas.
The fundamentalist said that?
Yeah.
Really?
I grew up, even in the 80s, thinking that here, we didn't celebrate Christmas I grew up in the a cappella Churches of Christ. We didn't celebrate Christmas as a religious holiday. We didn't sing any Christmas songs at church.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Hold on, we're going to pause the podcast so I can give him a hug.
I needed a hug.
Wow, no doubt. Okay, so I didn't know this.
It's not in the Bible.
Right.
Yeah.
When was Christmas declared a national holiday here in the old, good old United States? Oh, everybody goes to Google. Come on, what do you call yourself?
Okay, let's take
it. It's a shame that you don't know this.
I've never heard this, so.
I like it. That's good. So Rachel Held Evans wrote about Scopes Monkey Trial in Faith Unraveled, and so I've dumped the two guys' names that were involved in that now. I kind of forget, but that was one of the pieces, and now whatever city she lives in I think Tennessee or somewhere like that. It's kind of their shame. I think they have kind of some kind of statue memorializing the shame behind the Scopes Monkey Trial, because they get up and they start, I believe it was a college professor, is asking the individual on the stand, you know, well, what is God this and what is God that? And at some point the guy just goes, I can't answer that, you know, and it's like everyone's like, what do you mean? God can't give you the answer for that? And so, very fun and shameful and awesome day in fundamentalism, I guess, there. Did you find it? 1870 is when the U.S. adopted Christmas as a national holiday.
Yes. 100 years after the founding of our nation.
70.
Well, 93 years. Six. Yeah,
whatever. Interesting. Okay. And then if you rabbit hole that, you find Christmas and the celebration of things like that. I'm sure it's like, well, no, I'm thinking of Easter. There's lots of pagan stuff built behind it that my understanding, you guys can correct me here, is that like Easter, Roman holidays, pagan holidays were celebrated Easter, and at the time that Christianity came into the Roman Empire, it was taken back over as a Christian holiday. There's stuff like that. Is there...
Somebody grew up Baptist.
No, I... Yes, I did.
Yes, that is also what I heard as a child.
Mm-hmm. I heard that.
You guys must have still celebrated Christmas, though.
I heard that 4 weeks ago.
Oh,
you
really?
You need that hug?
Oh, yeah. Well, no. It's funny. We got to be completely materialistic about Christmas.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it wasn't a Christian holiday. So we just got to talk about Santa and Rudolph and have the tree and all the presents.
And all the gifts.
Yeah. Totally disassociated it from Jesus.
Right.
So could I don't know if you're ready to go here, but yeah. But is there some part of sort of what we might call fundamentalism that there's a positive to, which is that there's a clarity of belief, a clarity of identity, a clarity of practice that in some ways can be beneficial to spiritual development. So I mean we don't necessarily have to take fundamentalism all the way. But, I mean, right. If you look at kind of like the root of it, like the fundamentals of faith, is there some value in that?
And also, I think that most young people or people who are new to faith begin as, even if they're not in a church that's fundamentalist, they begin, and also, I would say, atheists. People who, or just anyone who gets into a movement, they kind of begin, they want people to say, well, what's the rules for this? And what, you know, give me the answer. And it's, when you're growing into something, it gives you an identity and a, so.
Rohr talks about this, that you know, spiritual life is a process of construction, deconstruction, reconstruction. And he says that those boundaries are important parts of the reconstruction. And he said at some during the deconstruction, you begin to ask, okay, so what does this mean? What are the limits of this? And you begin to question some of those things, but that those boundaries are actually necessary in order to construct, deconstruct, and reconstruct your faith.
Right. That is a Richard I do know about. That's Richard Rohr. Yes, just has amazing books and concepts on that. So I like what you said, too, and I love that. Is it construction, deconstruction, reconstruction, yeah. Right? And I was listening to a podcast, and he actually called it something else the other day, some other term for that three, whatever. the idea that when you start something new and fundamentalism being a part of that, I think that what I thought about is when you were talking about that, Tom, was the Bible, because in the beginning, when the children come out of Egypt and they're wondering, it's very barbaric. everything they come from is slave-oriented in Egypt and things like that. And to begin becoming what they became, I won't go into that, they were offered the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments are very clear. Here's what you do, and this is it. And so, you know, they had to be told in certain situations, look, don't steal the bull. Don't take the stinking bull. Leave the bull, it's his. Otherwise, here's what happens in different things in Levitical law. And so if you look at that and you apply the Bible to someone's life, I mean, look at a baby. When a baby's born, you have to, you know, tell the baby what to do, how to do this, how to do that. Don't touch this because it's hot. They're going to figure it out. You don't want them to. But and then the evolution of the Bible, you look at that, that could be someone's life and looking at it and applying it as a way of becoming less fundamentalist in that regard.
But to our listeners, Justin is not saying that stealing is okay.
Oh, did I say that?
That you can come to a point where you rationalize. I've grown enough in my faith, reconstructed, deconstructed, and now I can steal. I figured it out.
No, but I think that what the people of Israel did, and certainly the Christian tradition as building upon and understanding the Jewish tradition. Was to wrestle with what does it mean to love God and love neighbor, which is essentially what the Ten Commandments are about, and what are the limits to that, what does that look like, and so they wrestled with Scripture, and they questioned it and they pushed against it, they reinterpreted, and you find places in Scripture where it disagrees with itself. And it argues with itself. It reinterprets its history. Rowan Williams talks about this in his book Being Christian, and the section on Scripture, which is outstanding. And he points this out, and he says that there's a place, I can't remember, but it's later in the prophetic tradition when it's looking back on sort of the conquering that happened, and basically says, you know, we weren't doing the right thing. So even though in the midst of it, the historical writers are saying, look how great this is, the prophetic tradition is reflecting upon this and says, you know, we did wrong. And so Scripture is arguing with itself. And so this notion that we can come up with one true, full understanding of what a passage means, I just don't know that you can.
Mm.
Or one system for interpreting all Scripture.
Right.
So I was, and that's, I was thinking about that yesterday. I think I started thinking about our topic here, and there are millions of sermons that have been written on John 3:16, right. You know, and so, and millions of views, whether it be left or right, whatever it is, fundamentalism, progressive faith, whatever you want to call it, everybody has had their own interpretation. I didn't pick that, by the way, Scripture for any reason, just throwing it out there because everybody may recognize it. But someone said too, and I don't know who this was, but I love it, said, how can my beliefs be so rigid when the next book on the shelf can change them? I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Because we wrestle with it so much. I just started reading a book that Tom gave me called Adventures in Missing the Point. And
which is an old book, but it's a great book.
Yeah. It is. It's interesting. It's capturing me a little more. But Brian McLaren and Tony
Campolo,
and one writes something about, say, salvation, and the other one responds, which is kind of funny. They're kind of hard on each other in some spots. But he said, now I've talked about it so much, I have no idea what I was going to say. He said, truths. He talked about truths in salvation. And Brian McLaren said, you know, there are these truths. Campolo said there's these truths that people come up with on their own based on their own interpretation of Scripture and the various things. And then he went on to say there are no truths because this is people. This is a bias. This is people making up these truths on their own and da-da-da-da based on their own personal theology. Then he goes and says the real only truths, which most people always do, there are no truths, but the real truth is that Jesus died on the cross and was resurrected. No one's going to argue with that. But I think it's funny what people...
Well, some people would.
But... Okay, well, okay. I meant in our group here.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that some people define truths. And I think when I think of that, I think of legalism. Oh, that's a truth. Because what? Based on your personal theology, your bias or something like that? So...
And I think this is so talking about that though, like so Jesus, you know, crucified, and fundamentalism became a certain theory of atonement, you know, penal substitution, essentially that God was so angry that God had to punish somebody, and Jesus sort of became the whipping boy. And that was the only form of atonement or understanding Jesus' crucifixion that was allowed. And I think that's one of those places where fundamentalism kind of breaks down, because the central core truth is that Christ crucified, and that's what Paul says is the center of our proclamation. And you just twitched. Is that
true? No, it wasn't my chair. Sorry.
This is why we need video, because no one else sees the twitches or the grimaces when someone's talking. Sorry.
He's the former Church of Christ guy. He knows scripture Paul better than I am. Like, that's right. Paul did not say Christ crucified.
You're doing a good job.
But we're saying, but I mean, so the Bible doesn't really offer like a systematic understanding of the crucifixion,
right?
But yet fundamentalism said this was the only way of understanding. So when you talk about truth, the problem is that with fundamentalism is that it gets down to where it has to be like this narrow truth instead of understanding the wider truth, which is where I think the beauty of fundamental, if you understand the fundamentals of faith is Christ crucified.
The other thing is...
Christ is victor.
I mean, that's one, but it's not...
Is there multiple? That's the one question. Yeah. Keep your thought. So, penal substitutionary atonement theory is what you said. That's the... And is that a fundamentalist point of view?
Right.
They created... And then Christ as victor is another one?
That's another one, which is that basically the crucifixion of Christ is a story of Christ's defeat over sin and death, and that certainly has some value. I mean, there's multiple... even beyond that, there's multiple ones, and many of them have value and offer something like to the tapestry of faith. But I think if you just have one of them, I don't know, it breaks down at some point.
Or maybe different theories or different ideas presented in different gospels about what this means, or which is like John's has Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It seems like the point of glorification is the resurrection, but in Mark or in John it's the cross. That is when I am lifted high from the earth, draw all men unto me, or all people. So Jesus is on the cross, and that's when the Son of Man is glorified. So, but what I was gonna say is there's different ideas about the word faith, and this is a place where I think maybe the three of us would differ from fundamentalists, because like you have the song Bing Crosby, you know, he didn't write it, but he made it famous. Faith of our fathers living still. So you have faith as a list. You know, like that's the Nicene Creed, that's this historic thing that we've passed down from generation to generation. And that's a great song, but that's what I grew up with too, that faith is having a list, a set of answers. You know, having, you have the faith, you have the ability to counter the arguments, you have the knowledge, faith is knowledge. But Paul seems to define faith as the ability to act without knowledge. Like he said, the father of our faith in Romans is Abraham. And Abraham set out to go to a country he didn't know, set out to often argued with God, didn't know the right answer, didn't feel great about it, you know. But he's the one thing Abraham did was he kept walking to the place he didn't know he was going. He kept moving in the direction, even if he was mad about it, even if he questioned, even if he didn't know why. And that's why he is the father of, if he is the father of our faith, then like Everett was talking about, construction, deconstruction, reconstruction, that's an act of faith. When you are moving on in faith despite not knowing, or you're saying, like Job said, God, you know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. That's faith. When you have to move through all the crap life throws at you and still have faith, still trust, still love. Because if there's not doubt, how do you have faith? If there's not fear, how do you have courage? You know, so faith as a verb versus faith as like a noun. Sorry for the sermon.
I'm going to hand him a mic real quick so he can drop it.
Paul. I mean, Paul actually defines faith as foolishness, right?
Mm.
He says this is ridiculous to those who are not Christians, or who don't know. And Trip Fuller, who's part of the Homebrewed Christianity podcast, he writes this book. He has a new book out about Jesus. Anyways, his one of his central things is that Christians have oftentimes tried to build our proclamation of Jesus as, you know, this is so obvious that you have to accept it. I mean, this is kind of, you know, C.S. Lewis's old thing, which was, is Jesus either is a lunatic,
right,
a liar, or he really is who he is.
Right.
And Fuller says that outside of any sort of Christianized worldview, the story of Christianity is as silly as any other faith system out there. And it doesn't mean that just diminishes. In fact, he comes from a very sort of orthodox place of faith, but he just says Christians need to stop pretending like
the story that we tell
completely makes sense.
Right.
Right. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I love C.S. Lewis.
I do love C.S. Lewis.
No, and that's something
I actually do really like.
I do love C.S. Lewis.
That was a good point, Everett.
but in England, in his time period, in which he is, you know, writing against, you know, the rise of atheism and questioning the historical movement. I mean, his arguments really made sense within that worldview, but in which we're trying to dialogue and share our faith with people who don't even have a, you know, somewhat Christian worldview, simply just saying, well, either Jesus is a lunatic, a liar, or he is really who he is, can fall flat.
Yes.
Oh, and so we have to have a different sort of proclamation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
Which is where fundamentalism is I think struggling in our world, because it only can make sense within a very narrow worldview.
It can only make sense if every question can be answered.
Right.
And that's where, you know, just like the Scope monkey trials we talked about, the guy was just drilling the guy, and he could not answer the questions.
Yeah.
And that's where that faith falls off. So you have this, and you go kneel in prayer by your bed, and I'm trying not to make this crazy. My dog is sick and going to die, and I say, God, because I can ask all things and say, please heal my dog. Now, I don't like saying that word, sorry. They're expecting the dog to get up and walk around and be fine, as opposed to question can't be answered, but they expect that from God. Something else you said was about how there is protection in God, where many people, when we start some of the stuff we've already talked about, could be a heresy,
right?
And it's like we have to protect God and what it is, and if we're doing this out of faith, then we should be able to talk about anything, discuss it, and doubt it, pull into it, and just be able to go ahead.
And that's really the point, because for God to be God, God has to be beyond our comprehension.
Yeah.
So how do you approach how do you approach that, even just that idea, without faith? I mean, that's
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and then, you know what?
Lost
and actually,
my train of thought.
No, but actually, that's a good point because there's nothing to say beyond that. We have limited understanding of what God is and can be and does, and we have nothing. It's our because even if we're fooling ourselves, I would say we even are fooling ourselves that we can even understand any of this. The fact that we're sitting here around a little box talking into it about something that we think we may have a little bit of a grasp on is just hilarious in itself, too, especially me being here.
No.
Stop. Stop. Don't go there. Tell me this, and age of reason. When was the age of scientific reason and stuff like that?
1800s.
Okay, so that is...
I mean, from an American
standpoint, right, good.
And probably British.
Same time.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is one thing I heard about the birth of fundamentalism, because that time period, everything started to become, I don't like to use the word everything, but things started to become, here's the cause, here's an effect. If we can prove in science that this is, or reason, this is this, then this is this. And that's where it's like, oh, well, if we can do that with this rock and these things, then we can do that with our faith.
That's exactly what happened.
Okay. And so they started, go ahead, please, expand.
Well, my church that I grew up in, the Churches of Christ, they said Alexander Campbell was a student of the Scottish Enlightenment, got his education in Scotland, and he said... Scottish rationalism, like Kant and all those guys, he said, I'm going to take the scientific method, apply it to scripture, and from that we'll build a hermeneutic, which is a system of reading the Bible, which he came up with command, example, necessary inference. Anyway, boring if you don't want to know. And he said that this system of reading the Bible, once we spread it to everyone, because in their mind it was common sense, that will bring the church. It was a unity movement. It was a tool to bring the church back together. Later it became a sectarian movement, you know, and this became ingrained. But the point is, he was a product of his time, as you said, and he's applying those scientific methods, but consciously, to scripture. So let's use a modern tool and apply it to an ancient text.
Right. We'll figure all this out.
It's a recipe for disaster.
We'll have the answer. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Not to say there's not some great things that have come out of that.
Tom likes disclaimers.
I love
he always hedges his bets.
And he doesn't always...
I love all the people I grew up with.
He doesn't let you bash yourself either and make fun of yourself without... you know, I like you guys. There's a great...
I like you too,
There's a
Betty,
great... mixture of stuff around here. You got me full of it, talking through faith, because that means I don't really know what I'm talking about, but it's good that you guys are here to correct me. And then we got our poet over here who used the word tapestry. That's like a $5 word, man. That was nice. And then, of course, our Will Ferrell old school blackout debate guy over here, Tom, who just goes at it and just preaches. Love it. Oh, go look at it. I love that part. Okay, so wrapping up fundamentalism. Final thoughts. Yeah, because we did wrap it up totally in 33 minutes and 13 seconds.
You know, it would be interesting as another discussion at another time on different podcasts.
Episode 3.
To think about the things that Episcopalians are fundamentalists about.
Nice.
Which...
That would be too boring.
Or too painful.
Yeah.
Look in the mirror, buddy. Look in the mirror.
Mirror.
That's it. Nice. And wall. Tom, wrapping up.
You have to sometimes look in the own mirror. You have to.
No, I get it. No.
The log out of your eye before you look at the spec.
I agree. And we need to do that. I couldn't agree more.
And I feel like just that we thought about doing it fulfills that obligation.
Check.
Moving on.
Yeah. We'll throw stones and not do it. So anything?
I can't think of anything. All I can think of right now is
Your coffee cup's empty.
And, yes, sorry.
Yeah. In the movie, The Christmas Story, they're waiting in line to see Santa, and there's that kid behind him with the goggles, and he says, "I like the Wizard of Oz." Do you remember that part?
No, no, I don't. Not
it's so random.
Right. And that's it?
And that's all you Oh, I thought you were going to make like this like, brilliant connection.
I did too. I was like, wow, you are going to sell it. And that is faith. Right there, guys. Exactly. Right there.
Random.
I like the Wizard of Oz.
Sometimes it just happens.
That's awesome.
And you're like, why is that at the movie? Anyway, go ahead.
The peace of the Lord be with you.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at FunDrainPod. We'd love to hear your comments on our episodes and also suggest future episode topics. Also, if you enjoy what we're doing, go on to iTunes and give us a review, please. Thanks a lot.